This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Can't wait for this week's podcast. We have the Scottish historian on, who is like really truly one of the best historians in the world, and he's been speaking out against, you know, COVID, the lockdown, and everything that's going on. They are now not locking you down and not telling you that you can't drive your car and drive, you know, into town if you want to do something. They're just telling you that you shouldn't, and there's penalties for doing it.
Mm.
And they're using all of the technology that Scotland put in to track COVID. And now it's tracking your carbon footprint. And this is all part of the, you know, the grand cities of tomorrow from the World Economic Forum. It's in Scotland right now. It's really bad, really bad. Anyway, that's going to be our podcast.
I wish there was someone around to warn us about that when it was going on. You know, everyone just blindly accepted it, and there's no opposition whatsoever.
No opposition, yeah. By the way, the sequel to the book, The Great Reset, is coming soon. If you haven't read The Great Reset yet, read it or reread it, because the sequel is even more of a roller coaster. I wouldn't call it a roller. What is it when it goes beyond 90 degrees?
That bad.
Yeah, it's that bad. Yeah, it's that bad.
Is this book more of a Godfather 2 or a Hangover 2?
More of a Godfather 2.
Okay, good.
Yeah, you'll find a horse head at some point in your bed. Anyway, the American Society of Healthcare Pharmacists, the group that tracks the production of medications around the world, has declared worldwide shortage of antibiotics, specifically amoxicillin. This podcast is brought to you by Jace Medical. Jace Medical has made something called the Jace Case, and it's a great way to keep yourself prepared for the absolute worst. It is a pack of five different courses of antibiotics that you can use to treat a long list of bacterial illnesses, things like UTIs, respiratory infections, sinusitis, skin infections, and a lot more. It's great for shortages. It's also perfect for traveling. Darla wrote in and said, "My child developed an infection while we were on vacation. Luckily, we always travel with the Jace case. I started her up on antibiotics and the infection cleared up. Her doctor told us later it was likely that those antibiotics from the Jace case saved her life. Don't go unprepared. Jace case, J-A-S-E, medical.com, jacemedical.com. Use the offer code BEC10. Check out for $10. BEC10, use that, $10 off your order, jacemedical.com, offer code BEC10. By the way, today's podcast is really phenomenal. We actually called it War of the Worlds if it would have been broadcast 25 years ago. People would have been in the streets if they would have believed it. Now it's just like common sense and common everyday news. On tomorrow's broadcast, especially if you're Catholic, but anyone of religion, there is a civil war happening in all of our churches, but something unprecedented happened yesterday, and tomorrow we talk to an expert on Catholicism and the Vatican. Pope Benedict just released a book, and it was held until after his death, and it goes into the war inside the Vatican that's happening in all of our churches. You don't want to miss it. That's tomorrow's podcast, but here's today.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
So we're going to talk about the M&M's controversy here in just a minute. We're going to cover all the really important stuff today. But I want to start with a couple of cultural things that I think are important. I saw the movie The Menu last Saturday. And as a horror, black comedy drama, it's well written. It's well acted. It's a new concept. It's not a retread of anything. And Four out of five stars. Absolutely worth seeing if you like this kind of thing. But what this movie really says is really worth the price of admission. What this movie is actually saying about the view of the American left is much more terrifying than the plot. Now, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it, I'm going to spoil some of it, but not all the stuff at the ending. But it's worth spoiling some of the plot because the unwritten motive of the writers or the producers, or I don't know, is much more interesting than the actual movie, and it's worth seeing. So it was written by two comedy writers. One is he spent most of his time writing Late Night with Seth Meyers. He wrote for The Onion. He's Seth Rice. And then Will Tracy was the other guy, and he wrote for Trevor Oliver and also for The Onion. I commend them. This is a dark comedy, and it is really, really, it's really good. Not so funny, but ironic, you might say. And I don't know what their intentions were, but to me, this movie shows the psyche of the elite and the Hollywood left. Let me just explain what the movie is quickly. The movie it starts out with this Tyler Ledford. He's a foodie. He's really into food, and he's waiting for the boat to pull up to take him to this fancy restaurant, and he's talking down to this girl that he's with, and he's like, don't, I take food very seriously. This is very serious. And he gets on the boat and he eats, you know, like an oyster, and he's like, oh my gosh. And he's just that guy that everybody would hate. Okay. He's just, oh, the flavor. Do you have the oaky finish at the end of you? Oh, shut up. Okay. So he's traveling to this exclusive restaurant by this celebrity chef on this island. And it is really exclusive, only like 15 people a night. And it's, I don't know, $1,500 per person. Okay. The other guests that are attending are the food critic. She's Lillian Bloom, food critic, and her editor, Ted. Okay. Then there's Richard and Anne. They go there all the time. They're regulars there. Then there's a movie star, George, and his personal assistant. And then there's the business partners of the restaurant, three guys, kind of Silicon Valley kind of guys. And then for some reason, the chef's alcoholic mother is in the corner. But so they get to the island, and the maitre d' greets them at the boat, says to the first guy who's the foodie, wait a minute, you said you were bringing this woman, and this isn't the woman you said. I know I changed it at the last minute. And there's some tension there, and you don't understand why. So then she goes on, she gives a tour of everything, and it's very, very weird. Then dinner begins, and the chef seems to have like 30 guys behind him, you know, men and women, you know, apprentice chefs, if you will. And they are, it's like military. Yes, chef. And it's cultish. So he introduces all of the courses, and each course comes with a really unsettling monologue. After the third course, uncomfortable truths about each guest, from embezzlement to affairs and everything else, is printed on a tortilla. Each one gets an individual tortilla, and something exposing them is on that tortilla. The fourth course comes out, and the sous chef is crying, and he's like, I thought I wanted this job. I don't want this job. And he then kills himself. Okay. The staff then makes it really clear. Yeah, there's a spoiler. I said earlier, the spoiler alert. I'm not going to tell you the ending, but I'm just telling you some of the things that are going on. Makes it clear you can't leave. They cut off, you know, a guy's finger, and everyone's like, what the hell? Okay. Then they go into all of the ways that things are going to happen to people. And what it is each guest was invited by the chef to come that night. because he says they were responsible or contributed to him losing his passion for his craft, or just making a living off of his work and the work of artisans, and they have to be stopped. Okay? So this is a very elitist chef who is talking about, you know, you're going to be dining on a whole ecosystem tonight. And it's all very, just so pretentious, the entire thing. But he thinks the people that are there are pretentious, and they are. And he says, you know, nobody's going to walk out of here alive. Now, the girl that was not supposed to be there, we find out that she's a hooker, okay? And she was hired to be there with that guy. All right, won't give you all the details, but it's pretty amazing. But you kind of get it right off the bat that she's probably, you know, a hooker. She's not a hooker. She's an escort. So let me summarize. We have a chef who lost his passion for his job, recruits a staff of perhaps 30 who in the end follow him into this death cult. He blames his loss of passion on those who come to his restaurant. He blames those who are in the restaurant for the loss of his restaurant during COVID because they had to close, not the government. He blames the angel investor who took control because the chef would not compromise on any of his extravagant ingredients. And when I say extravagant, I don't mean, hey, you should replace, you know, the Colby steak with Salisbury steak. I mean extravagant. Okay. A massaged cow is not extravagant in this restaurant. So here's why I wanted to talk to you about this. In this movie, food is art, food is life, and art gives everything in life meaning. Now, I'm used to going to a movie and seeing the bad guy being, you know, a white guy, you know, some European Nazi, you know, white supremacist, an oil guy, a Trump voter, conservative, you know, just even a Republican. Got it. The targets in Hollywood movies usually are, you know, from the farmlands, the hapless boob from the small town, or somebody who doesn't understand Los Angeles or doesn't wear black like all those in the know in New York City. But here, the nihilist protagonist is himself a disgruntled elite. No question, he's an elite, most likely lefty. And he finds abhorrent, not the people in the heartland. He finds abhorrent the people in his own class. Okay? So if you look at the list, you have a member of the critic class. This person just lives to set the rule and tastes for everybody else. The character is really very much the real life. Remember the movie Devil Wears Prada, the real monster, Anna Wintour? This person is so caught up in their own world of their own making that everything not uttered by them is beneath them. This dialogue between these two characters, her and his her assistant, sounds like any broadcast of MSNBC. It reads like the New York Times editorial board. It's the conversations, you know, you would hear from professors who have convinced themselves of all this gobbledygook on any university. It sounds like the World Economic Forum or the Washington Post or New York Times editorial. It's just, you don't get it. That kind of attitude. Got it? The yes man is the sycophant that stays by her side. He's not yet ordained, but he so pathetically wants to be a part of that elite in that world. He'll say and do anything. He'll laugh at anybody's jokes. He doesn't realize everybody's laughing at his, you know, behind his, you know, butt kissing back. This is the scene that happens at Vanity Fair's Met Gala every year. It just, I got to be invited. I want to be invited. I could be there. Okay. All of that garbage that you get from the elites, that's there. The other victim includes the rich, easy target, but not just rich. He's the empty consumer. The rich aren't villains. Just the rich that consumes what is cool, trendy, and hip. Not because they like it, but because they know everybody else who's anybody is consuming it. And so they will do what everybody else does because it's cool. And they don't care about anything. They just want to be in that group. The mindless eater. Now, so far, do any of these characters sound like conservatives? Then there's the vain Hollywood type that will do or say anything just to keep his stardom alive, and his guest, a producer who helped or enabled him. Then the angel investor. The angel investor was invited and had to die because he thought compromises should be made in the budget after COVID, while the chef knew there can be no compromise on art. Okay. The evil Silicon Valley financiers who are driven to greed and profit no matter what it takes. The foodie who is also a fake. While he talked a good game, he did it to appear like an elite. He would be better than everyone else, but without any merit whatsoever. So far, what you have is the World Economic Forum. What you have is a microcosm of what we stand against. All of these people who are bogus.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program, and we really want to thank you for listening.
David, glad to have you on. David Ticey is the director and producer of Grid Down Power Up. Welcome to the program, sir. How are you?
So glad to be with you and your listeners, Glenn. I'm doing great. Thank you.
You know, I'm so glad that you have come out with this documentary, because I keep asking, what happens when we get all these magic cars on, the grid? The grid can't handle that much. When we get rid of all of the coal that is making all this electricity, what's going to happen? And you've looked at these things and looked at the grid itself. Tell me how much trouble we're in.
So what we're doing with this documentary, Glenn, is we're not so much looking at where the power comes from as far as how much wind we have, how much solar,
right,
all the EVs, et cetera. But the point is our power grid is vulnerable. It's essentially tenuous, and it is open for attack.
But
our military has protected our command control centers, our missile systems, etc. But our substations in our neighborhoods, which had these huge transformers, is just completely open to attack. Mm. And if that goes down, we're so reliant on electricity.
So this is more along the lines of what we're seeing with these. There was just a report out from the Pacific Northwest that neo-Nazis are going to be, shooting and trying to bring down the power substations. So we're looking at that kind of attack and, I assume, cyber attacks?
So this is a very comprehensive documentary. We talk about four major threats. One is a physical attack like we saw in North Carolina, but or in the Pacific Northwest. But it could be a major attack like we had in Metcalf, California, that was covered by 60 Minutes. If 9 substations, however, were taken out, there was a FERC report, which is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, that found if 9 critical nodes were taken out, it could cause the power to go out nationwide. That's more what we're concerned about in a physical attack vector.
So
the other three attacks are a EMP attack, which has been talked about at times over decades, which is an electromagnetic pulse attack that would primarily come from a state actor like a China, a Russia, an Iran, and North Korea. Third attack would be a cyber attack that could come from a smaller group, or it could come from a state actor. And then the fourth threat we talk about is a geomagnetic disturbance, which is essentially a natural EMP attack that would come from the sun that could wipe out our transformers and, again, cause a nationwide blackout.
Do you go into the geomagnetic field and are poles drifting so far with this causing real problems with the magnetic field, which would make your last scenario very likely?
So our documentary is only 56 minutes.
Okay.
So it moves fast.
Right.
And so we kind of limit some of the topics that we go into, but the name of my film company is Paul Revere Films. I'm literally trying to wake up America to the biggest threats. I'm trying to open a dialogue, you know, which is getting started. It's now being watched by members of the Texas legislature, in the Florida legislature. I'm opening it up to congressional committees, chairman of Energy and Commerce Committee, as an example. So I'm trying to, we need to wake up your listeners and viewers, because we need some ticked off soccer moms and dads where we say, we are vulnerable, we've got to fix this, and the equipment is out there that can be provided at the front end of our substations,
yep,
so that we can make us less vulnerable.
I will tell you that you are taking on, at least with the EMP and the, you know, the electromagnetic pulse that could come from the sun as well, you're barking up a tree I have been barking at for a long time. And I know, I'm sure you've read the book, 1 Second After.
Of course.
And that was written for the same, that was a Paul Revere moment too. The guy who was trying to get this to Congress said, we've got to make this into a story that they can digest. There seems to be, for some reason, zero interest in protecting something that, if it goes down, 90% of the U.S. population will die in the first year. What is the objection to fixing this and protecting it?
So actually, there has been some action off and on by U.S. Congress. There's been a couple bills have passed. Donald Trump actually passed an EMP executive order that was codified into law in the National Defense Authorization Act of 2020. But the problem has been just ineptitude, disorganization. Frankly, there's been people that have been completely inept that have not followed through. And so we need more follow through. There still needs to be better. There needs to be better regulation. The big issue is we have something called regulatory capture, where essentially our electric utilities are self-governed. And there have been all kinds of examples that we talk about on our website at griddownpowerup.com, where a few times the legislators and our policymakers want to do the right thing, and it's just not followed through well enough.
What do you think is the most likely of those scenarios, and how real do you think this is?
So I'd say cyber attack is probably the most likely. So Ted Koppel ended up writing a book called Lights Out back in 2015, 2016. And he was concerned about the grid going down for an extended period of time and a number of Americans dying. Jennifer Granholm, who's the current Secretary of Energy under Joe Biden, was on a Sunday morning talk show, and she was asked if our adversaries are in the grid. And she said, yes, they are in the grid, and they could potentially shut it down. Therefore, what we saw with, this is maybe a little bit of a stretch, but Southwest Airlines, where Southwest Airlines had all their ability to be able to organize planes and their people for 5 days. I mean, that happened. You know, I think that could have been essentially a trial run or a warning to our American leadership that we can do this. We can do this for other systems, but they did it for Southwest Airlines. And again, that's not proven. That's some conjecture on my part, but I believe that could be the case.
I think it could be the case, too, on what happened with the airlines here just a few weeks ago, where Canada and the United States had to ground all of our planes because we lost our connection to all of the planes to send them emergency alerts and, you know, hey, you're getting close to this plane. And they say that was just human error. I, for one, don't necessarily I don't dismiss that, but I also wonder, was the human error that you clicked on this to see porn and it downloaded some sort of a virus? Because it was a textual malfunction with the system, and it shut down the entire United States and Canada for several hours. And I think that is also a possibility of something saying we can do this. What are the ramifications of it going down? Can you explain a little bit about what happens to our society?
So let's talk about that. There is something called the EMP Commission. It operated for 17 years, and it had some of the strongest scientists in the world that were on that commission. And you mentioned that 90% statistic, which just sounds ridiculous. But you look at the number of people that died in our Texas snowmageddon, that was 250 or so. We're talking about a number that would be a million times bigger than that. 250 million people. Now, it sounds ridiculous, but let's talk about how we get there. Our municipal water systems and our wastewater systems are completely dependent upon the power grid. I visited a municipal water system that serves Highland Park in Dallas and talked to the head guy there, and he said, we have no backup. We're dependent upon the grid. We thought about some backup generators in the past, and it would cost us a few million dollars, and so we dispensed with that idea. We saw in Houston, Texas, 2.2 million people for 36 hours had boil water orders because there was an electricity problem. This ended up being an internal generator in their case, which is not exactly apples to apples, but we are dependent upon water. You look at cholera and what can break out if our wastewater systems don't work. You look at the food supply. There's no more Uber Eats.
There's no refrigeration. Everything goes bad within a week or two. Everything.
And it essentially does turn into zombie apocalypse, unfortunately,
right,
because our National Guard isn't going to be there. You think about the two steps are, if it's nationwide, it's one thing if power goes out in Louisiana because we're there in Arkansas and Texas and can supply. But if it's nationwide, we essentially don't have that. We'd be counting on France to send us food and water. If our water systems go out, human beings die after 3 days without water. And therefore, that obviously is an issue. And then you look at an extended period of time. If it's 3 days, yes, it's bad. If it's 3 weeks, all hell breaks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at what happened with Katrina. I mean, you have 72 hours to get to some sort of stable safety. After that, in 3 days, when no help has arrived within 3 days, society goes to hell. And it just takes on a whole new atmosphere, as we saw with Katrina. That's normal to have that. The other thing that is shocking to think about is how many people are alive today that shouldn't be alive. They're taking heart medicine. They have insulin. The psychiatric drugs. In 30 days, you begin to have a whole new problem on your hand. And it's all caused by an outage of our power. You really want to cripple America? Forget about the financial sector. Just hit the electric
if you hit our electricity power grid, we're done as a nation. We're done. And it's not good. By the way, when you look at the ones that are sabotaging, people shooting into them, we don't have those, you know, replacement parts just kind of hanging out. You have to make them, right?
Exactly. So we talk in the film about transformers, and especially our highest volume transformers. These weigh hundreds of tons, and most of those are made in South Korea and Germany, and there can be a long lead time for those, and therefore there's huge risk of if they are taken out. And you look at our substations, you can walk around your suburban neighborhood and you could see them being protected by chain link fence.
I know. David, thank you for what you've done. The name of the documentary is Grid Down, Power Up. You can find it at Grid Down, Power Up. Find out all the information. I urge you to pay attention to this. Everything electricity is really important. David understands what the consequences are of us not protecting it. This should be a bipartisan and uniting issue because we all die if they don't have this protected. Thank you so much, David Tice, GridDownPowerUp.com.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Chris Brady, who has run GlennBeck.com mainly into the ground. No, I'm kidding. That was me. has really been the backbone of our archives and everything for so long. He started, I think he was there before you were a part of the show, the second iteration.
Yeah, he was there in 2000?
Yeah, you dumped me. You were like, I got a hotter girl. I got to go.
Best decision I ever made.
Yeah, right.
But
you came begging, please.
That's not how I remember those conversations exactly. He's been around forever. Chris is a great dude and has been around forever.
So he's just put out a very timely coloring book for your kids. It is Joe Biden Hides Classified Documents. You can get it now at BidenColoringBooks.com. This is volume one, by the way. Mm. And it's a coloring book. These are great pages. And, you have to find the documents that he's hidden, all over, sometimes on his body or, you know, in the picture someplace. They also...
First ever visual illustration I've seen of Corn Pop, which is not how I expected him to look.
Yeah.
You know, but that's apparently what he looks like.
So anyway, you've got that. And then great moments in Biden history. This is the and your kids will love coloring this in. This is Joe Biden leaving his house with a shotgun after he just blew three holes with a double barrel shotgun. He put three holes in the door, coming from that speech where he said, that's what you got to do. You just shoot through the door. No. And then, of course, the great moments with the top secret Hillary's first kill list is all in. Joe Biden Hides Classified Documents, the coloring book. Because why not? Why not? You can find it again at BidenColoringBooks.com.
Hard to find all those documents. Just like in real life, it seems hard to find all of his documents.
Yeah, but he cares deeply. He cares so deeply about the process.
So deeply. So I was listening to, and again, we do these things for you. We do these things for you, America.
So you don't have to.
You don't have to. They can't get away with things because we listen and we read the mainstream media. And we look at it so we can find all their nonsense and report it to you so you don't have to digest all of it. But they did a report on the Biden missing documents in the on the Daily today, which is the New York Times sort of
do we have the New York Times Daily podcast? Music? I love that.
Right. When you're talking about the Daily Music.
Yeah, so let me interview you about the Daily today because that's the way it...
Okay.
Joe Biden, superhero document sleuth. Documents have been found everywhere, and he's going in for a rectal exam later this afternoon. Will we find more documents? We talk to expert Zib Zibler on The Daily. Zib.
Hello, Glenn.
So, I hear you have great things to say about Joe Biden and the documents.
I have to pause when you ask questions for no seemingly good reason on this podcast. So what was the strategy of the Biden White House as they went through this process? That's the question. And I think it's an interesting one.
So, Zib, I don't have the answer to that.
I want you to ask me that because that's what they talked about
okay.
on the podcast.
All right. What was it?
Yes.
What was the strategy? Yeah. What was the strategy?
And what's your name, the host? Michael. Michael. Michael, the White House had a strategy when these documents were first uncovered at the Penn Biden Center. And that strategy is something that I'm happy to talk about if you ask me about it.
I'd love you to talk about it.
Talk about what?
The strategy of Biden and the rollout of the documents.
The strategy of the rollout. The strategy of...
The music's playing. Oh, sorry. Glenn in a second.
Okay, so we're just supposed to sit here and listen to this really crappy music.
Yes, go.
I'll play it again. The strategy of the...
No, not yet. This is where people are thinking about the question that you're about to answer.
Okay, I'll stop.
Right. From the New York Times.
We're back to the intro again?
Shh. This is a little longer than they usually are. Does this end?
So the strategy behind the White House documents was something that the White House felt passionately about. They just didn't want to talk to the public about this after finding out about the November 1st batch of documents. And the reason why... Oh, more music?
That...
I was trying to finish.
No, I want you to think about what you just said there.
Okay, so should I, do I set it up again? Or do I...
No, just...
So their strategy was to make sure the public didn't know about this, and the reason for that was... They just didn't want to affect the investigation. And, yeah, I know. I took it at face value, too.
So what you're saying is they didn't want to infect anyone's thinking on the investigation because if they found him to be guilty, the White House wanted to make sure that he paid the full price.
Thank you. Okay, so I didn't want to talk when there was no music. It would have been weird. So, yes, the issue was, no, they just didn't want the investigation to be
tainted
in any way.
Right.
So they just didn't tell the public at all. And then 68 days or so went by.
But only 68 days.
Only the 68.
Right.
And the 68 days went by. And then more documents were found. Okay. And CBS News breaks the story of the first set of documents. And what does the White House do? They only confirm that report, but don't talk about the second batch of documents. And that was to, again, protect the sanctity of this investigation that now the whole public knew about already.
The New York Times breaks down all of the key topics every day with The Daily.
So to make sure I'm clear here, I have no skepticism at all. They told me this, I'm saying it to you. I have no levels of skepticism.
Why would you?
They said it. The Biden White House told it to me, and now I'm telling it to everyone else as if it's the news.
As what we do here every day on The Daily from The New York Times. Na na na.